Hello, everyone. Today we are with James Drudge. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. Welcome back.
Hey, it's good to be back. How are things going?
Good, good. How are things with you?
Just normal. You know, we're running for office just on the Texas border. Mm-hmm. And it's been an interesting experience this cycle, to say the least.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to dive into the border. Tell us a little bit about what you saw.
Where do I start? There were so many different things going on. So I'm working with, I'm running for office in Florida's 12th Congressional District, and I went through a biblical citizenship course and also teach biblical citizenship, but went to a Patriot Academy thing out in Texas, which I highly recommend anybody who's seeing this, who's never heard of it. Rick Green and Patriot Academy do this really cool thing where they take over the Texas Capitol, and mm-hmm. students can come in and learn about how legislative procedures work. They do mock committee sessions, but the students take over one section, and then I was with a group of military veterans that took over the Senate side. So the students worked out of the House side, and then mm-hmm. the older folks, us military veterans, and then people that just were interested in the Constitution worked out of the Senate side, and we passed legislation. I'm telling you that because I met this really great candidate named Steve Boyd. He's running for Congress in Minnesota, and our two campaigns have kind of teamed up a little bit. Both love the Lord, both very conservative, believe in the Constitution. And I said, hey, do you want to go to the border? And he was like, yeah, let's do it. We talked about going a few times, and then it kind of just worked out. We timed it. I had something happen with my dad, and my dad passed away at the end of the year. We weren't able to go when we were trying to. We planned a date. Little did we know that things were going to pop off in Eagle Pass just two mm-hmm. days before we went. You probably saw it or heard about it on the news where the federal government came in and they were cutting razor wire mm-hmm. that had been put up by the Texas National Guard. Well, we were in Eagle Pass the day that was going on, and right the day after the Supreme Court said that the Border Patrol could do that again. We went to Eagle Pass first, and I'll be honest, on the ground in Eagle Pass, things were pretty quiet. And part of that was because these coyotes or these smugglers are smart. You know, if there's one area that gets a lot of media attention and then all of a sudden Texas starts, putting pressure there, well, then they're going to go to an area of the border where there's less pressure. So it's kind of a cat and mouse game. So we didn't see like massive loads of migrants coming across. However, there were illegal aliens coming across all over the place. One thing we learned, so we got there, and I would highly encourage you to chat with, I'll get you his name after this. His name is Doc Pete Chambers, former Special Forces guy, and he is organizing a lot of what you see. He did the truck rally that was down there on the border, and he gave us some insight and lined us up with, I mean, literally told us, we had booked hotel rooms that night, and he goes, there's going to be action somewhere in between Laredo and Roma tonight. You need to start heading there. And we're like in our hotels already. I was like, guys, let's go. So there was four of us. We had some security with us, and then we had a videographer with us and Steve. And we rolled middle of the night down 83, which it was wild because we're running along the Rio Grande. And we went from Eagle Pass to Laredo. When we got to Laredo, it was probably around midnight, where we encountered the end of a high-speed pursuit. And it was a 16-year-old. And this information, too, we found out from Border Patrol after the fact. They weren't allowed to release this. We reached out to Border Patrol, and they wouldn't give us this information mm-hmm. willingly. Some of the agents secretly called us and then provided us with these details. But, you know, this is what's partially wrong and why I'm running. I'm a former military public affairs, and the taxpayer has a right to know what their tax dollars are being spent on. Mm-hmm. And when the U.S. government refuses to release information that's basic, we weren't asking for troop movements on when we plan to invade a country. We're asking like, hey, what's the nationality of the person that you arrested? That should be a basic thing that you could give us, right? Mm-hmm. Are they a citizen? Why did you arrest them? What are they charged with? These are basic questions. Didn't ask for a name because I understand sometimes juveniles are treated as juveniles, and that's been a way that things go where we don't release names of juveniles. Okay, but you could still tell us the age, why they were arrested, what they were doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody should know that. It's part of our rights to mm-hmm. Know what crimes people are being charged for, right? But they wouldn't do that. The agents called us separately and told us. So the 16-year-old who you'll probably see get perp walked in handcuffs, we just happened to be there passing through. We saw the lights. We turned around on the interstate, came back to where all the lights were, and uncovered the end of the scene. And one woman had tragically died that night. Four people have been ejected out of the vehicle. So the one woman died. It was packed full of nine illegal immigrants that were coming here. And one of them died that night. Another one was not expected to survive. But when we asked Customs and Border Protection for information, they would not provide anything to us. So we got the real details from the agents that were on the ground, who called us secretly from private mm-hmm. numbers after the fact and said, "We're not supposed to be talking to you." Well, I mean, that alone is like a red flag for mm-hmm. where we used to have a transparent government that would tell the taxpayer. When I was in the Coast Guard, you know, the policy for the Department of Homeland Security was maximum disclosure with minimum delay. You want to maintain credibility. You want to maintain mm-hmm. Faith with the public and trust with the public. And if you're not telling the public what you're doing and why your tax dollars are being spent, I just have some problems with that.
Mm-hmm.
So we leave Laredo. Headed to Roma. Now, we were informed that Roma is heavily cartel territory. Like, the cartels operate 60, 70 miles inland in that area in the United States. This area is wild. It's a very cool town. If you were just driving through, like, I was thinking about, like, I would love to bring my wife here. It's cute. It's quaint. There's like this old little cathedral, and there's the little town square was lit up. Like, it was beautiful. But you could tell the area right around there was very depressed. There had been, there was on the other side of the river, there's gang wars and cartel wars. There's shootouts regularly. And me and the guy who was doing security for us, we walked across the river and actually entered Mexico. We went the legal way. But we walked over, and Border Patrol was like, "You did what?" Like, they couldn't believe that we walked over. We just wanted to see what it was like. But it looked like a third world country, as you would expect. And they were like, "We would never cross." Like, there's areas that you cross the border, but you don't apparently cross there. We didn't really go far.
What was it like? Was there a line and people checking?
No, we went actually at night. We walked over there just to check it out. And then we came back. Really, we wanted to see what it was like coming back to the United States. Mm-hmm. And when we went back into the United States, there were a line of people that were camped out on the bridge, and you'll see them there sleeping in tarps, like almost folded up like tacos, but they'll have the tarp clipped to the fence, and then they roll it up and put, you know, and there's families, everything else. And those are asylum seekers that are trying to do it the legal way. Now, the U.S. government is still processing everybody the same. So what they don't know is those people that are, and I mean, this is sad, it's just the reality we're in, those people are coming here seeking asylum, and many of them are still paid smugglers, but they're just doing it the right way. They're getting to the border checkpoint, and they're, "Hey, we're claiming asylum," and they tell them why. And that was a process that has been completely exploited and has been manipulated and is now just, that's the way people are coming in. But they'll wait there for 2, 3, 4 weeks on top of that bridge, and, you know, they'll go get food in the town and come back. What's interesting is that people that are entering illegally and swimming across that river, or riding an inner tube across that river, or walking across, because there's times where it's low enough where you can walk across, they are coming in, and Border Patrol picks them up, takes them to a migrant processing facility. They get their fingerprints taken, their biometrics taken, which is face scan, and then they get a court date, and they get released. So they still get asylum. So the people that are, it's just like, this is the mm-hmm. hypocrisy that we're continually seeing with this government and this administration, is that the people that are supposed to be doing things the right way are actually the ones that are suffering the most. And the people that are breaking the law, there's just no consequences for it. They mm-hmm. come in, they get a court date for a year and a half to 7 years from now. And I asked a Border Patrol agent in Roma, we were looking into Mexico, we're standing there, and they were, you know, when it's 9, 10 o'clock at night, supervisors aren't there. They'll chat with you and tell you what's going on, especially if it's just one-on-one. And I said, "How long have you been a law enforcement officer?" And he laughed at me, and he goes, I used to be a law enforcement officer." And he's wearing a Border Patrol uniform, right? He goes, "I used to be a law enforcement officer when I was a street cop, but now I'm really a chauffeur. I pick up migrants that are here legally. I take them to a processing station. They're released a few hours later." He goes, "We're not enforcing any laws." And we kept asking these Border Patrol agents everywhere we went. We said, "What do you need? Like, what is it that you need? Do you need a border funding bill?" Because that's what your Republicans and Democrats talk about. You know, "Oh, we need a border. We need to pass a border mm-hmm. funding bill." And that's laughable. Not a single one of them said that. We talked to the Coast Guard. We talked to CBP. We talked to Border Patrol. And none of them wanted a border funding bill. They just want to be able to do their job. This is an executive branch issue. Mm-hmm. This is the end of Title 42. Everyone that we spoke to acknowledged that Title 42 had been working. And really what we're seeing is anarchy. Like this is, which I love that we can talk about on this program, but this is what happens when you watch a society deal with the struggles between godliness and godlessness. You know, when you're pursuing God and you're doing godly things, there's law and there's order and there's people have respect for the law. In a society where you have godlessness, you have everybody has their own truth. They have their own value system and people don't want to enforce laws.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you see happening? You see exactly what you would expect to happen. If you're a student of the Bible or of history, you see lawlessness, you see anarchy. And the reason that people like Steve and myself are running are to hopefully get to a point where the next step in this process would be tyranny. We do not want that to happen. You know, after anarchy throughout history, from a biblical standpoint, you'll see anarchy happen and then they want it ended, right? They want the anarchy ended and they demand somebody to fix it and they're willing to accept a tyrant. And I don't want to see that. Like if we work the Constitution and get back to what the founders believed in, the basic values of the Constitution, and I really believe we can save our country. Things like that you guys have promoted here, biblical citizenship, liberty pastors, salt and light, all these things are critically important and valuable to saving our country.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we're running for office is to hopefully get back to those basic foundational values that our founders believed in. But yeah, it was a wild trip. We went to, after that, I guess I should tell you more, right? We went to McAllen, Texas. This is all along 83. And if nobody's ever been, I would encourage you to go. The beauty about Texas.
Just take security, please.
You don't know. Look, I had to go somewhere else or I would have been packing. We did have two people with guns, which, the beauty about Texas is that you're allowed to open carry. I normally, just from a strategic standpoint, wouldn't open carry. I have my concealed carry permit. I would have done that. But I was flying to another state after that and it complicated things because I couldn't have a check back. Anyways. That's why I didn't carry on this trip in particular, but, usually I would have been, but it wasn't, I mean, if you're the typical American and you're not a threat to these groups, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily be worried about, driving on 83. There's border patrol everywhere. You'll see a border patrol vehicle every couple miles.
Mm-hmm.
They're just not doing anything. What's funny is you can drive in Florida and you'll see Border Patrol on 75 in between, Dade City and Bushnell and just north of Tampa, and Border Patrol have people pulled over and they're enforcing the law over here or trying to enforce the law over here. But this is strictly a policy decision being driven from the executive branch. Let me go back to something. We'll talk about McAllen in a second. One thing that I think is an interesting deal that you're seeing both Democrats and Republicans call for is a border funding bill. It's like, why? Like, we don't need to spend more money on the border. Every single time that something goes wrong, people are like, oh, we need to throw money at it. And we keep throwing money at things and it's not solving any problems. We have $34 trillion in debt, $210 trillion in unfunded liabilities. And Congress wants to keep printing money and, spending more. And I didn't understand why, but when we were outside of Laredo, it clicked for me. Like, I mean, I do understand why, but it's all a business and everything is a business. You look at the way that Congress spends money related to big pharma, they contribute to Democrats and Republicans to pass whatever they want. Mm-hmm. That you wonder why there's a new flu shot every year. It's because the government pays for it, right?
Mm-hmm.
When the government is spending money, people will do whatever they want. And those elected officials that take contributions from these folks, in the case where I'm running against a guy who's claims to be a Republican, he's taken 3,745 special interest contributions from BlackRock, Facebook, Disney, Target, Microsoft, Google, Pfizer, Johnson and Johnson. But you look at the Democrat opponent I ran against last time, she has contributions from all those same players.
Mm-hmm.
And you see that when you get outside of Laredo and you see what looks like a military base, but it's actually private security contractors and it's a private, privately contracted migrant processing facility.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh, that's why they don't want to shut this down. It's a giant business. And Republicans and Democrats are using this, what is actually a national security emergency. We've got millions of migrants illegally crossing the border in the United States. It's an invasion. That's really what it is. But they're using it for their own personal game to fundraise, to raise funds for their party, to get people worked up over it. Mm-hmm. In the end, they both want to fund the private contracting firms. It reminded me of being over in Afghanistan or Kuwait and in Iraq, which been to all three, served in Iraq and Afghanistan, and we would always go through Kuwait. But you'd see these big, you know, contracted facilities that were there to support our troops. And it was run by like KBR and Halliburton and these groups. And you go, oh, this is a business. Mm-hmm. Instead of having it over in Afghanistan or Kuwait or Iraq, we've just moved it to the United States. And now we've got these migrant processing facilities there.
Could you explain how those private facilities get funded?
Well, I mean, through Congress, ultimately. Okay. So there would be a contract. There's a contract request or a procurement request, but ultimately the funding comes through Congress. The House would pass it and the Senate would pass it. And then more money would be set up for those agencies, Border Patrol, CBP, ICE, to contract with a group. And they put out a... sometimes if it's, and I don't know all the specifics on this, I'm not in Congress yet. I've never served in Congress. I'm a small business owner. I'm a veteran and I love the Lord. And I said, I'm going to run because I'm tired of the people that are currently in office, a bunch mm-hmm. of corrupt people that are influenced, by money and power, and they want to keep that power. But the way that you would typically see it is that they would post a contract and people would bid on that contract and then, but it would be based on the money they have. But when you have an emergency or there's emergency funding, there's all sorts of money they can throw around and then they can award contracts without the typical oversight. We're watching a business basically take place and there's a lot of money to be made in that. And then you have the NGO groups that are also on the take. So you'll see in some of the video that we provided, this is in McAllen, Texas. We went to this, we got a tip about going to this this city park. It's down on the Rio Grande on the river. Mm-hmm. And it's wild. It's, I mean, from here to the other side of the room is Mexico, right? On one side of the river, the other side of the river. And you can go there, but what's insane is that half of it's blocked off and there's all this yellow fencing and it says like COVID, you know, COVID zone. And it wasn't, it said that, but that's not what it was. It was a migrant processing facility, but it wasn't, it was the other one. So after they get out of, all right, migrant gets either picked up illegally or comes in and claims asylum the right way. They go to the migrant processing station. They get transported there. They get their fingerprints done, biometrics done, and they get a court date. They'll get their court date about a year and a half to 7 years, depending on, you know, the time frame. Mm-hmm. Not sure exactly how that's picked. This is according to what we were told by Border Patrol. Mm-hmm. And then where do they go from there? A lot of them don't know where they're going, or they might know somebody somewhere. Or they have a, they want to go. And this, we talked to some Haitians that had just went through one of these, and they were coming to Miami, you know, and they're in Texas, came from Haiti, went to Mexico, came in across the border there, got processed, went to McAllen. They're sitting at McAllen Airport sometimes for days, and they're coming over here to Miami, Florida. They wanted to work. And you know what? Like, hey, God bless them for wanting to work. I appreciate they're coming over here to want to work, but there has to be a legal process to this. We have mm-hmm. to enforce the law. Otherwise, it's lawlessness and it's anarchy. So, but after they go through the ICE processing facility, which is privately contracted, then they go to an NGO group. And in this case, Catholic Charities was paid for this. So they have a contract with the city, and that's probably funded through federal dollars as well, I would imagine, because there's an emergency happening and they mm-hmm. Probably get federal funding for that. But half the city park had been blocked off. Now, it wasn't open to citizens. You couldn't go in there. You weren't allowed to. In fact, security stopped us. The sheriff comes up. I was calling the public information officer to find out what's going on, demanding answers. And they were like, you can't go in there. We're like, well, what is it? We just want to know what it is. Like, you're literally, you are occupying a city park, which is paid for by taxpayers. Can you tell us what's going on? Come to find out, it's Catholic Charities. And because of the amount of migrants that they're seeing, illegal migrants and migrants in general that they're seeing at McAllen, which is important. We should really call them what they are, illegal migrants or illegal aliens. It's hard to break what we've been conditioned to say mm-hmm. over the past decade, where they, you know, always use that purposeful word migrant. But they are, most of them are illegal migrants or illegal aliens that have come here the wrong way. And after they get done with the contracted facility through the government, then they come over to a group like, in this case, Catholic Charities. And Catholic Charities feeds them, gets them clothes. These guys have brand new Nikes on. And then they get, where do you want to go? All right. Well, they line them up with a group wherever they're going and they pay for their airfare and they just disperse them all throughout the country. And that's also in part paid for by our tax dollars. Mm-hmm. It was a very eye-opening trip, to say the least. Mm-hmm. You know, what's the solution? It's leadership. And I think that it all boils down to the White House. Like, that's it. In the mm-hmm. Attorney General and enforcing the law. And if the Attorney General is being told by the president not to enforce the law, then that's the problem. And, you know, I have kind of a common sense approach to this. I think if people aren't going to do their job, you stop paying them. Like, mm-hmm. if the executive branch isn't going to enforce the laws of the Constitution that they swore an oath to support and defend and to uphold, then we shouldn't pay them. That would be, I don't want to spend any more money. Okay, we have a spending problem. We mm-hmm. spend $6.2 trillion a year. We take in $5 trillion. That's a spending problem. Mm-hmm. We need to figure out how to cut the budget. So I would start with the U.S. attorneys, the Attorney General, the president, their secretaries, everybody who works in the White House. I'd apply pain at the executive branch. Mm-hmm. And Congress has the authority and jurisdiction to do that. And I bet you anything within a couple weeks when people aren't getting paid, there would be some change. But the people that are currently in Washington have no interest in doing that. And that problem is bipartisan. It's mm-hmm. it's not a Democrat or Republican issue. It's just a uniparty establishment issue. And it's not just the border. It's pharmaceuticals. It's, mm-hmm. I mean, it's our military. Look at Ukraine. This latest bill, and I don't know when this is going to air, if it's going to be,
next week.
Okay. So in a few days, we were recording this a few days before, but if you look at the bill that was just okayed, it was 2 or 3 days ago, by the time this is airing, a week ago, in the Senate, they're looking at a $66 billion funding bill for Ukraine, right? With some money going to Israel too. And the problem with that is that is the entire budget of the United States Marine Corps and the United States Coast Guard combined for 2024. Like, that's the kind of money that we're talking about. You could literally pay two branches of America's Armed Services and all of the fees associated with running those branches, from ammunition expenditures to for training purposes, to fuel, to, like, I mean, maintenance of aircraft, everything, like mm-hmm. purchasing new aircraft, ships, all that stuff you could pay for. And that's just another one of these bills that they're trying to pass. It's all follow the money. It's a giant mm-hmm. business, and people on both sides are, I would say, corrupted by their desire to maintain power and to appease the people that are contributing most of them, which are the special interest groups. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, that's, I guess, what I've learned throughout this whole process. It wasn't just the trip to the border, it's by running for office, but mm-hmm. that's the big takeaway on this. So
what do you tell citizens that are upset about what's happening on our southern border, but what do we do about it?
Demand that your legislators change the way that they're doing things, get involved, mm-hmm. you know, attend. I think that this... I wish it was an easy answer. Like, I'm not going to lie to people like every other politician out there and say, oh, elect me. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, I would be a step in the right direction, but that's not going to solve things overnight. I'd be one of 435 members of Congress. Am I going to do a lot? No, I'm going to draw attention to it. I'm going to do things like this where we're talking about it and bringing attention to the issues. This is going to take a massive cultural change in America. It's going to take churches starting schools, mm-hmm. I mean, that's how you put the Bible back in schools. Churches can start schools. In Florida, that's a great opportunity for... There's a church in Lake Wales that started a school. Mm-hmm. A year ago, they started. They have 104 students enrolled. They have 140 students on the waiting list right now.
Well, it makes sense because you go to a church for the values, right, that the pastor right. upholds and preaches to the congregation. Therefore, you would also want to send your child there to learn and grow in the same way that you are Sunday right. mornings at church, but throughout the week.
Well, what's the Great Commission say? Go and make disciples, right, of all yes. nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I commanded, right? Well, mm-hmm. teaching them, make disciples, right? What better way for a church to make disciples than to have a school? And in Florida, there's no reason for a church not to have a school mm-hmm. anymore. We have vouchers. The money follows the student. See, every student, I think it's $8,000 that is given to a school. So if... the student goes from public school to a church, that money follows that student. So I say, you ask the question, like, what can people do? Get involved, take a biblical citizenship class, become salt and light. Salt and light, Jesus says we need to, you know, be salt and light, right? What does that mean? It means go to your city council meetings, pray for your elected officials by name. We're called to do that from a biblical standpoint. You go to these city council meetings, go to these county commission meetings, go to your school board meetings, contact your federal elected officials. And I'm saying the local stuff because it's just as bad as the federal stuff. Mm-hmm. But you've got to start teaching people basic biblical values again. And that's not a call to, I mean, look, I would love for everybody to become a Christian and to know the Lord. He's changed my life. It's been awesome. I can't, you know, I wouldn't change it. It's been the best experience ever. The Lord has really changed my life. At one point I was headed down a totally wrong path, mm-hmm. and my business was failing. My marriage was failing. And don't get me wrong. Life's not perfect now, but I would much be rather rolling through life with Jesus driving than me, mm-hmm. you know, like it's been a great experience. And, there's no better joy than getting to know the Lord and reading the Bible, praying. That's really the way we fix our country. Read the Bible, pray, and trust mm-hmm. the Lord. And God's a big God. He does big miracles. Like, he created all of this. If you can get past the first 10 words of the Bible, which is right in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. That's the biggest miracle ever. Like, mm-hmm. people are like, oh, I don't know how somebody could walk on water. Well, if he can create the heavens and the earth, like, he can do whatever. And he could certainly save America if he can create the heavens and the earth. Mm-hmm. So prayer, getting involved, learning the Constitution, learning how you're to be involved. Most people don't know because schools have purposely, like, the curriculums have changed. And I think that's because we have a bigger enemy. I think that Satan's always working against us. Mm-hmm. I think that a lot of these people get into it with the best of intentions. It's not a stab at, you know, public school educators. I think they really did get into it with the best of intentions. But I think that they get handcuffed by what they're allowed to teach by, you know, policymakers and, mm-hmm. oh, you don't want to offend somebody. Okay. Well, if the churches do it, then you can put Bibles back in schools. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, calling your federal elected officials, you know, get involved, door knock for candidates, make phone calls, phone bank for candidates, get good, godly candidates elected, people that love the Lord. And the reason that I say that is that, again, we're not trying to create, you know, mandated theocracy here in the United States where you have to, no, I want less federal government. Mm-hmm. I want real freedom. I want less federal government, push the power back down to the states. But I say that because if somebody has good biblical values, they're going to agree that it's wrong to steal. It's wrong to, you know, lie, right. cheat, murder, take bribes. All those things are wrong. And we have a group of elected officials now that has no problem with it. They call it, you know, lobbying. They mm-hmm. call it special interest, you know, contributions, right? Like, other committee campaign contributions is what it's called. If you look it up on the FEC's website, that's how we fix it. It's mm-hmm. not an overnight thing, but you know, enough people get upset about it. Yeah. You've got what, 10 million migrants, illegal migrants that have come here that are in the past few years. We had over 300,000 in the month of December. These numbers are astronomical. They're radically changing the United States of America. It's a national security threat. Everybody should be outraged by it. And instead, you know, I don't think Congress really cares to fix it. Mm-hmm. Well, this is worth shutting down the government over. And I'm not saying that because I think that that's a light thing to do. Like, this is a national security issue that has major implications. And, we know that there are real enemies out there, even though that the Patriot Act has been, you know, now weaponized to use against Christians and all that stuff. But there are people out there. There are radical Muslim extremists that want to kill us. They talk about it openly. There's a lot of people out there that hate the United States of America, that hate our values, and they're coming across the southern border, and that's an invasion. Mm-hmm. And the people, this is the other thing. I mean, the people that are allowing this to happen are guilty of treason, you ask me. I mean, we should be holding them accountable. Mm-hmm. I don't know if enough people speak out and get upset about it, draw attention to it, and remember it on election day. They're not going to want people to remember this when elections come around. Mm-mm. They'll try to distract with something else, and you know, it'll be on to the next thing. But mm-hmm. we'll try to keep fighting the good fight and reminding people about it. So hopefully we can get back to some law and order.
Hopefully. And thank you for shedding light on all of that.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Of course.